Conversation with Dr. Kenneth Clark. Proceed. Can one make out a case for the Negro situation as being actually an advantage, an existential advantage, psychologically?
I don't quite understand what you mean by that.
Well, the fact that he's not burdened with a past, that he is free to create not true for some others, burdened by a past.
But I think the Negro is burdened by a past, which determines the nature of the future which he is seeking to create. I think that he is burdened by a past that begins with disruption, that begins with stark and flagrant cruelty and barbarity. You see, this is the beginning of his past, in a sense. And this past continues into about 200 years of systematic exploitation and cruelty, which is slavery. This is his heritage. And he has been the object of the problems of the whites who have this glorious past, you see. I mean, he is the culmination of the meaning of the white culture and civilization in terms of dehumanization of him. This is his past. This is the past which he is burdened with. And this is the past of the whites who are so proud of their past, you see, that the Negro becomes the personification of all that is meaningful in the white man's past, because he now is the stark, the stark example of Magna Carta, and all of the things. He is the example of the meaning of the white man's Christianity, etc. All right. This is a complex past, and it's a kind of past which, as I said before, determines the nature of his present and the kind of future he is insisting upon. He is insisting upon a future that will make the white man whole.
Make the white man what?
Whole. H-O-L-E. W-H-O-L-E, you see. That is, there is something ironic about this discussion about who has and who doesn't have a past, when actually the present has fused the past of Negro and white. I mean, this may be terribly disturbing to the white. And by the way, this image of fusion is both literal and figurative, I think, here, because you asked me about my feelings about Africa. It might be disturbing to the general American public for a Negro to dare to say that he feels no more identification with Africa than he feels with Denmark or Ireland. But actually, in terms of what he is, he is as much Irish or English or Danish as he is African, because of this more literal fusion.
You mean blood fusion?
Blood fusion that has occurred in America during these past 300 years. You have a blood fusion, you have an historical fusion, you have a psychological fusion. And I suspect that I certainly haven't worked this out. I wish I had the time and luxury in which to try to work it out, but much of the ambivalence that Du Bois referred to, and which we see so clearly today among Negroes, may be a reflection of this total fusion that he is, you see.
Do you see more resistance now to the blood fusion on the part of Negroes than in the past? either in actual intermarriage, in actual fusion of blood, illicitly or illicitly, and in the emulation of the white physical ideal that was true, say, a generation ago?
I think on the ideological level, there's probably a greater resistance on the part of Negroes to mixture with whites now than they've been in the past. But I think we ought to be careful to make a distinction between ideology and verbal postures and what actually happens. I'm not sure, and I would like to know where one could find reliable statistics on incidents of intermarriage over periods of time.
There's a paradox here, isn't there, implicit somewhere in the situation?
Unquestionably. I mean, I think that American racism is best seen in terms of paradox and contradictions and inconsistencies and myths. Verbal myths coexisting with behavioral contradictions of the very myths.
Do you remember Norman Podoritz's piece in commentary sometime back?
I certainly do.
Solved only by assimilation?
Yes.
What sort of sense does that make?
Well, I reacted to Norman's piece, and my first reaction was that this was a curiously and scathingly honest piece. The second part of my reaction was that I thought that his solution made no sense at all, for a very simple reason, that it didn't work in the past. There's no reason to believe it's going to work in the future. Norman Podoritz talked about assimilation of whites and Negroes as if this was something that was new, was going to happen, you see. What this man, I don't know why he didn't understand it, but what he apparently didn't understand was that part of the problem was this, that white males had long been exploiting Negro females. This is part of racism. And one has to look long and hard to find any pure-blooded American Negroes, and these are not, the mixture of the American Negro is not a reflection of a preponderance of white women bearing children from Negro males, you see. Well, if miscegenation, which is the real word here rather than assimilation, if miscegenation hasn't worked from slavery, if a white male could be as brutal toward his own flesh and blood as he was toward other Negroes or colored in America, why does Norman Podoritz think that legalizing the mixture is going to change the psychological and social situation?
Anyway, it's a long postponement of any solution or any modus vivendi at the best.
Right. I think that what he is asking for will not be a means toward an ethical end, but will be an indication of the fact that the ethical end was obtained by other means, you see. Once you get a meaningful, equal status, human form of interracial mixture in America, this would be one of your best indications that the complexities of the problems of racial cruelty have already been resolved.
There's some argument, of course, among sociologists that the great melting pot hasn't been melting very well, that the Italians, the Irish, the Jews have actually had pretty hard, core, well-defined groups that continue.
Oh, no question about that.
Peripheral assimilation, but not central assimilation.
Well, you need only to look at the politics of such northern urban centers as Boston, New York, Chicago, to see that this is a politics of ethnic groups and ethnic, division of the available political spoils. You look at New York and you see that almost all power centers are divided in 3-3-3, you know, Catholics, Protestants, Jews. And among the Catholics, the struggle for status or control in terms of Irish Catholics, Italian Catholics, Polish Catholics, these are some of the facts of American political and social reality, at least in northern urban areas. Now, in the South, you have these subordinated by the South's great preoccupation between white and black, you see. And I suppose one of the most disturbing things that could happen to the South is for an accelerated migration of blacks, which would then confront the whites with the problems among themselves, you see.
That's true. It's happening already. For instance, you almost had a Republican governor in Louisiana
right.
this last election.
And, of course, if Senator Russell's plan for dispersing the Negro population out of the South were ever to be successful, then Senator Russell might find that his class of whites would be in terrible jeopardy from the working class, poor whites in the South.
The populist movement might be revived.
Oh, yes, and with a vengeance here.
That's the worst news I've heard in a long time.
Worst news?
The worst news I've heard in a long time, breaking this up.
Oh.
This tape with Dr. Klopp to be resumed.